All right, welcome into the Fan pregame here on Sportsnet and Sportsnet 590. The Fan, for the next hour, Ailish and Justin in the chairs. We will shift over to Sportsnet 590. The Fan will have your Leafs Rangers coverage on the radio as well. And if you're looking for that game, we've got it on Sportsnet Ontario tonight, 7 p.m. A lot of hockey across the network tonight, which is a great time to have Frank Saravalli on, who's going to join us in a moment. And, of course, it's the first day of spring and March Madness, so we've been... Screen time is up tonight.
Yeah, it's a dizzying sort of day. Like, we got so much on the network. We got basketball games going on at all times. We've got, you know, brackets that are already sunk in many ways. It is, it's a good time for sports. It's going to get a lot better in like a couple weeks, too. Like, we are really gearing up for the real good stuff. So, exciting time to be a sports fan for sure.
Okay, let's kick it off with Frank Saravalli, president of hockey content at dailyfaceoff.com. Frank, how are you? Oh, is that a Vermont Catamounts sweater?
It is, yes. I am fully in on March Madness. Back from GM meetings, and can't be steered away from the tube today.
Do you have a favorite team?
Yeah,
what's your bracket looking like?
I'm not as concerned about the bracket. What I do every year is join a block pool with my buddies, and so it's the same pool the whole time. And obviously, in basketball, the final score can be anything, so there's no bad block. And you throw in a couple $100 at the start, and literally every single game in the tournament has a payout. And the later you go, the bigger the payout. And it's like, it's electric watching the final few minutes of every game being like, is it going to land on my block or not?
I've never done that. I love that. It's like Squares kind of for like the Super Bowl.
Yeah, same exact thing, just with the same pool for every NCAA tournament game.
Cool.
So the beauty of the NCAA tournament in some ways is symmetry. 64 to 32, 16 to 8. It is all nicely laid out for you. That's why we can get so excited about it, because there aren't really any surprises. Symmetry is something that the NHL just discovered going to 32 teams. Not that it's perfect like the 64-team bracket is, but, you know, you get eight teams in each division, and it's all laid out fairly, and I think all the teams can get behind that. But there's some whispers about Houston coming to town. What do you know about Houston potentially being the 33rd NHL team?
Well, Emily Kaplan from ESPN identified who the potential owner could be, or at least the man who's expressing a ton of interest. And what I'll say is, having checked in with sources over the day since the report, I don't think there's necessarily anything new. There hasn't been an advancement in the process. Now, I think there's been other, you know, things percolating with Atlanta, and they've even gotten some off the wall expressions of interest from a place like New Orleans, believe it or not, and some other places. But that said, there's real little chance that the NHL is going to be moving into a formal expansion process until after they have this new CBA bolted down with the NHLPA. And so that's expected. Gary Bettman, the commissioner, announced yesterday at the GM meetings that they plan to begin those discussions with the PA in the first week of April. In a perfect, perfect world, and I'm not even sure with the timeline now delayed a little bit, they were hoping to start in February. Now that it's April, is it still possible and or likely that they get a new CBA extension done by the start of the Stanley Cup final? It feels aggressive, but I would say until that's done, you won't see any movement on expansion.
Okay, I'm glad you brought up Gary Bettman and the GM's meetings, because I think there's a lot of interesting tidbits that came out of that. You were there, I assume, enjoying it. You look tanned, so I thought maybe you soaked up a little sun.
I was going to say, I'm over here looking beautifully bronzed,
yes,
as
you are.
My
You're
last
glistening.
Name ends in a vowel.
Okay, so what are you laughing at?
It was a good joke.
It was good. Okay, so let's start with the All-Star Game issue, because this one we talked about, Justin and I, yesterday, and it's really bugging me that I guess they're kind of locked into this situation where they've already told the Islanders that they're going to have an All-Star Game, and they're going to bring all these Olympians over right before they go to the Olympics. And so when you look at the situation, what's the best-case scenario from this conundrum that they're in, where they're going to have something that is way less interesting than the Olympics, but they're going to have to bring all the players basically there before they head to Italy?
Well, that's not necessarily a guarantee, and we were asking a bunch of probing questions about this on Wednesday in Florida, but didn't really get many answers from the NHL. They didn't want to be pinned down, and so basically the tagline was, you know, everything's on the table. And I understand that to include the idea of potentially punting on the 2026 All-Star weekend and moving it to another year. Now, they undoubtedly owe the New York Islanders and UBS Arena, as beautiful as it is, an event for their fans. That said, they also owe their partners, Sportsnet and ESPN, because those are part of the TV rights. And so that's an event that people have paid for. And what could happen is an Olympic appetizer, a send-off in the best way possible. So some of the things that have been talked about are country-led skills competitions. That's cool. Or what about a mini 3-on-3 tournament? Now, nothing's going to have the same juice as a Four Nations face-off. And for good reason, like, you can't go to that well every year, particularly a few days before you fly into Milan for the Olympics. That said, I want to remind everyone and be super clear when I say this. Four Nations was never, ever designed to be an All-Star game replacement. It wasn't. It was a one-off appetizer to get back into international hockey and to do it 1 year ahead of the Olympics. And so for anyone thinking that because you did that at this year's break, that means suddenly that even though the NHL has raised the bar, that everything now needs to hit that standard is both unrealistic and not possible.
I wasn't really thinking about Sportsnet and ESPN and what they're owed in all this, but
we work for them.
Could some of it be, hey, we'll float you some World Cup games, UBS Arena and New York Islanders?
Look, anything's possible. Again, when I say everything's on the table, I mean quite literally everything. Mm-hmm. Like, you can always find a way to work that out. But my understanding is also that the World Cup of Hockey in 2028 is a separate media rights deal, which is how ESPN started to get back into the game in 2016. So that's different and aside, but could you carve that out? I'm sure you could, but you could also just do something in 2027 when we don't have anything on the docket and just have the schedule include just an Olympic break and you don't need a send-off and you can just have players fly to New York after spending a couple of days with their families.
What about a Canada-USA broadcaster game, us versus you?
I'm going to need to start skating a little bit more.
You've got a whole year.
I don't think twirling around the ice when I'm coaching minor hockey is going to be quite enough. And it's just the games are so late here. Like, I can't play a 10:30, 10:45 game and then possibly expect to get up the next morning. It just doesn't work.
Okay, so hockey could be one of the events, but, like, what would your game, if it was games, Olympic style, what could you wipe the floor with us with?
Anything with beer in hand. It wouldn't be curling for me because I've never curled, although I really want to. I would say I could play pickleball. I could do horseshoes. I would have a blast doing golf. I'm not sure that I would win.
Okay.
But I'm probably better than your average golfer.
Okay. And, okay, Frank.
I mean, yeah, anything, any beach activities, I'm in.
I'll let you two duke it out on the course then. Okay, moving on. We're talking to Frank Saravelli of DailyFaceoff.com. I was listening to you on the morning show yesterday, maybe the day before. Mm-hmm. You outlined that you thought there was a lot of good teams in the NHL, a lot of good teams that could do something, but maybe only a handful, not even a handful, a small handful, a really small handful of great teams. In fact, you outlined Dallas and Florida as those potentially great teams as opposed to a whole bunch of good. Why Dallas and Florida top tier for you?
Well, Florida, I think, speaks for itself. The success that they've had in the postseason, and I thought the one thing that they really struggled with this season was that they hadn't properly replaced Brandon Montour and Oliver Ekman-Larsson. And I know that Seth Jones has really struggled to date since the acquisition, but I would assume that a player of his caliber will settle in relatively short order and help that Panther team moving forward. I think they've got their depth back, and obviously big questions remain with Marchand and Matthew Tkachuk and their injuries and when exactly they come back, but the Panthers are geared up and ready to go. I do think there's a slight question mark about the Dallas Stars and the right side of their defense. It is somewhat in question, but Miro Heiskanen, if he's missing the first round, that's going to put a big dent in things. Otherwise, I think the Stars up front, with the addition of Mikko Rantanen, are the deepest forward group in the NHL by a relatively wide margin. And I think with Jake Oettinger in net, that they're really well positioned at both ends of the ice to do damage. And Then, by the way, I can knock the right side of their defense, but the left side might be top to bottom also the best in the NHL. So I like what Dallas has built, and they've been a team obviously knocking on the door, a cup final, multiple Western Conference final appearances. There's both conferences, I think, are wide open. Like, if you told me either one of those great teams that I just mentioned to put them in that separate category, if they lost in the first round, depending on what their matchup is, if it's Dallas, Colorado, like my head wouldn't be sewn to the carpet. That's not how surprised I would be. But those are teams, I think, both eminently capable of going on deep, deep runs and winning it all.
I think a lot of that has to do with the playoff format, not to keep jumping back to the GM meetings. But one of the things that I think a lot of fans were craving some interest in was that 1-8 format, the historical one coming back. It seems like Gary Bettman is not interested in that change as of now. Is that something you would like to see, a little bit different playoff structure? Because I know this was brought to create rivalries, but it feels like sometimes it's not doing the task that it had been told to do at the beginning, and now we're all craving to see a little bit of a different shakeup.
Well, I think part of it is because there's one stupid element to me of the format in the way that it is currently constituted, in that if there are two wildcard teams that get in, let's say it's 4-4 from each division, and just because of 7th or 8th seed, one of those teams ends up crossing over to the other division, doesn't make any sense to me. Like last year, we ended up with Vancouver, Nashville in the first round. I'm not complaining because I happened to do all those games in that series and the travel was ridiculous.
Yeah.
I'm complaining because that gets away from the idea of the rivalry. If it's 4-4, then of course, put that team back in the original division in which it came from. But if it's 5 from one division and 3 from another, then I could see obviously the idea and need for a crossover. Other than that, it's nonsensical.
Yeah.
My stupid little rant aside, what I'll say is I think all of this belly aching and this idea that it has to go back to being 1-8 is insane. I mean, look, I know that you look at today's matchups and it's very likely mathematically to see Colorado and Dallas in round one. And people are saying, well, this is the 3rd and 6th place team in the overall league standings. Why on earth would they meet in the first round? What's their reward for a great regular season? It's a fair question to ask. But if you're going to get to the end, and this is the exact explanation that Gary Bettman made yesterday at the GM meeting, was you've got to beat the best team. So whether you run into them in the first round, the second round, or the third round, whatever the case is, you've still got to go the distance and topple that team at some point in time. And I understand the bitter disappointment that one of those teams would have losing in the first round, of course. But I think on the other end of that is, yeah, if you're going to lose anyway or eventually, might as well lose in the first round. I know the owner's not going to love to hear that because of playoff gate, but your team is going to have a nice, well-rested summer, and they're going to be extremely hungry coming back next year. Fans don't love it, but if you're going to beat the best, you have to beat the best, and I'm a firm believer in that. And I think more than anything, the best part of the Stanley Cup playoffs is the first round. And if that means electric, titanic first-round matchups, I'm all for it.
Yeah, I feel like I'm in the minority in that I don't really complain much about it. I think we've always had great matchups. I think Vancouver, for every Vancouver, Nashville, you're getting a Colorado, Dallas, you're getting, and maybe that shouldn't be in the first round, but that's going to be absolutely electric. Like, it's going to be unbelievable to see that series play out and a bunch of other great series play out in the twos and threes.
To your point, the other part of that is you're getting these two unbelievable teams at their most rested juncture.
Yeah.
And I think people will say, maybe that's one knock against the Stanley Cup playoffs, is that they actually get worse as they go on. Mm-hmm. You've got the best matchups and excitement in round one, and then it tails off and tails off finally until everything ramps back up again in a cup final, hopefully. That said, if you're getting the two of the better teams playing early on, not just does it add drama and intrigue, but you're getting the best version of those teams theoretically as well.
We are once again talking to Frank Saravelli of DailyFaceoff.com. Mark Carney, the Prime Minister of Canada, was on the ice with the Edmonton Oilers today. Leon Draisaitl wasn't. Not a good trade for Edmonton, but
salary cap-wise, probably not either.
Probably not.
I was going to say, not even a good trade for most Albertans, but we'll see.
But Leon Draisaitl, yeah, you don't like to hear if you're an Oilers fan that the guy who is the presumptive Hart Trophy winner, at least by the odds, is dealing with something. Do you have any insight, intel on what's dogging Leon Draisaitl?
It sounds relatively minor, like a day-to-day kind of thing. I haven't heard much more than that. And it has been a monster season, and not just in goals and how he's lapping the field and how he's nipping at the heels of Nathan MacKinnon in points, but also just the other individual metrics and the dominating fashion in which he's, you know, scored at both even strength and on the power play. Like, it's been very impressive this year from Leon Draisaitl. And by the way, I don't want to scare anyone as we get closer to the end of March, but Connor McDavid is not mailing it in. It seems like he's kind of revving up his engine as he has done pretty much every March in his career.
We're talking about Frank Saravelli of Daily Faceoff. Okay, I was just scrolling to get your tweet because I wanted to get the stats right, but you had something about, the referee, I guess not discrepancy, the changes in refereeing. NHL teams have had 747 fewer power play opportunities year over year. Some have had 50-plus lower power plays this year. You did a little bit of a deep dive on it. Like, what are we learning about reffing in the NHL? Are players just really nice and polite nowadays, or are refs changing their strategy?
Well, I think that's the thing that I'm struggling with the most is overall, and you read the numbers, 747 fewer power play opportunities. That means 12% fewer power play opportunities year over year through the same number of games as last year. And I asked the NHL's Stephen Walkham, who runs the officiating department, what's your theory? Why are these numbers so far down? And he said, well, a couple things. Power plays have been so lethal that he thinks that teams are being more careful. And two, he also noted that their missed call rate, so they grade their referees every night based on both calls made and missed that they should have made. And he said that their missed call rate is not up. Now, obviously, I'm not privy to the data, but I'm not even saying it's suspect. What I am saying is suspect is that NHL players are suddenly playing more clean hockey than they ever have in their life. And I think the discrepancy in power play opportunities so far to this point in the season has been masked by a record high in power play conversion rate at 21.6%. And had that not been the case, we would be crying foul about how much goal scoring is down in the NHL. It has crested. It's slightly fallen as relative to the last couple years. And I've raised an eyebrow at it because you've got certain teams like the Minnesota Wild, they have 60 fewer power plays year over year. If we're talking about a team that converts at 21%, that's 13 fewer goals that they've scored, which could mean 2 to 3 more wins. So we're talking about significant changes that I don't know what exactly the answer is yet, and there may not be one that's readily available, but I think it's a trend worth keeping an eye on.
If it were the same, maybe Alexander Ovechkin would be the goals leader by now. Just 4 goals, though, in the month of March for Ovi, slowing down, I guess, just a touch. Still confident that he gets it done?
I am, but I think he's probably wearing a little bit of this chase. This is going to be the hardest part of it to break through, knowing that everyone's watching, everyone's talking about it. The great chase is on, and he's down to his own number left to break it. I think the real question is, when do you start to get nervous as a whole, as the game, thinking, what if this lingers into next season? Not that there's anything wrong with it. I just think it takes a lot of the drama and suspense away to know, hey, he's going into next season and he's only 3 away. Well, he's going to have that in the first week or two of the season. And all of a sudden it becomes a lot less anticlimactic than it is right at this period of time, because if he's somehow able to pull that off, not only is he going to breathe a big sigh of relief for the likely Eastern Conference number one seed, but I think the rest of the Washington Capitals organization as a whole will, to have that monkey off their back heading into the playoffs.
Yeah, I'm betting that he's going to get a couple tonight playing the Flyers at home. Feels like a get-right
game.
Flyers,
Sabres, Islanders twice, Blackhawks. Yeah. Like, there's enough opportunities there, one would think, to light it up a bit. And we're like one hat trick away from this being a total non-story, but who knows?
Frank, I appreciate you coming on and reminding me of one of my favorite road barns, which was the Gutterson Fieldhouse.
Oh, the Gut is a great place
to see. It's one of my favorites to play. I was literally talking about this the other day with you guys.
You didn't say the Gut.
Well, I said Vermont was one of my favorite road rinks in St. Lawrence.
It's a classic.
So walk down memory lane, even though we would beat the catamarans or whatever, the catamounts every time. Catamarans.
Can't even respect them with the proper pronunciation.
All right. Frank, appreciate it.
Don't tell Marty St. Louis you said that. Stop it.
Please don't. We will see you next week. Thanks so much. Enjoy the March Madness.
See you guys.
That's Frank Saravelli, president of Hockey Content at Daily Faceoff. Yeah, we had that conversation the other day off the air. I said that was one of my favorite places to play.
Very oddly, too, we Googled the alma mater of Frank Saravelli earlier. I have no idea why, but it happened.
Because I wanted to see if his team was like playing in March Madness.
That's right. Yeah. It was not Vermont.
No. I know. It was shocking that I saw that. That he was just wearing a Vermont sweater. I'll have to send him a Dartmouth hoodie. Okay, we have about 3 minutes. We got to get our best bets in. We also have to talk about Shapiro and Vladdy.
Let's get to it.
Okay.
You pick. Dealer's choice.
All right. So, well, let's just wrap up the bets because I just talked about it. So, we've got the game tonight, which I'm quite intrigued about, which is Ovi getting a chance to get back on track against the Flyers. I've got an Ovi ladder for you tonight. One goal is plus 125. I think tonight's a get-right moment. He can get two goals at plus 700, three goals at 39-1. But I think my favorite one is last goal scorer of the game at plus 775.
You're getting sneaky really good at this.
Okay.
I'm just saying, last goal scorer with all the empty nets.
All the empty nets.
I'm just saying, and, like, take a compliment.
Okay, appreciate it. But it sounded like I wasn't good at it before.
Parlay that with Auburn. No more parlays with Auburn after today.
Okay, so Ovi to get the last goal of the game, like almost 8-1. And
I love it.
You know he's going to be just throwing pucks, empty nets. Like, this is a game that So,
I absolutely love it.
Thank you so much. Go ahead.
I like it better than mine. I'm chasing two dogs in the NCAA tournament tonight. Coach Cal with Arkansas, plus 180. Against Bill Self in Kansas, and then Yale.
I got Yale in there too.
Are you allowed to?
Yeah. Cheer for the Ivy League teams.
Yale plus 265.
Our good friend Kate went to Yale, so go
there
Bulldogs.
There you go. In a matchup against Texas A&M, 7.5-point favorites are Texas A&M.
I put Yale in my bracket.
5.5, I believe, are Kansas. I don't know. I guess you could take the points, but I like both. I'm going to be cheering for both those teams. I think this day needs a couple upsets, and I think Arkansas. And Yale can provide it.
Okay, cool. How do I do this? This won't make you upset.
What is that?
Mark, it won't make you upset. Mark Shapiro was talking very positively about Vladimir Guerrero Jr.
That was like a cheer, though.
Okay. So today, in a very orchestrated discussion, Mark Shapiro was talking to the media about Vladimir Guerrero Jr. I'm going to read two quotes. This is about the ongoing contract. Quote, I think we are going to sign him. I think we are going to extend him. The reason I feel that way is because we have such a clear alignment on the desired outcome. That's all the time we have to read. But there's amazing quotes, Sportsnet.ca, etc. This is very strange. All of a sudden, just turning the table, you're coming out like, why we're going to sign this guy? I'm Mark Shapiro.
Yeah, it was pretty stunning because he's very careful with what he says.
He doesn't just do this for fun.
You can go back to the generational thing. I think that was done for a reason, pushing back on that because, you're trying to keep prices down, I suppose, on this player ahead of a big negotiation that is currently ongoing. But I don't know what exactly the card that is being played right now, but it's much more interesting than hearing Vlad go on these world tours talking about all the teams he'd play for. So this is a bit of a twist in the story that I think is good for Jays fans and at least benefits the Blue Jays. I'm not sure what that actually results to, but the fact that he was able to go out on this limb means something. Just what that is, I guess we'll find out.
I feel like it's a lock.
Oh, boy. That's why you are not doing the Shapiro.
A lockety
lock. You're not Shapiro with the sit-down.
As much as a lock as Auburn is to win the national championship.
That's
parlay it with
probably
Auburn.
Probably more accurate.
Vlad's a Blue Jay, parlay it with Auburn. Mm-hmm. I don't know. I watched that interview and I thought, he's got a little pep in his step.
He was very happy. Happier than someone should be
and
if they're about to lose Vladimir
Guerrero
Jr.
And guess what's in 1 week from today? Opening day at the Rogers Center.
There you go.
So just, get your crystal ball.
Still 7 days to sort it out.
I think we're onto something here. Okay, we're going to...
next offer on the table.
We'll take a quick break. On the other side, Kristen Shilton of ESPN will help us tee up our Molson Leafs hockey segment. We've got the Leafs and Rangers on Sportsnet Ontario and in Sportsnet 590 Fan. We will see you 5 minutes and we'll be gung-ho for the Leafs tonight.